listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have one of my favorite songwriters and one of my favorite artists from SoCal originally, Mr. Clayton Joseph Scott. Say hello, Clayton.
Hey, everybody. What's up, LA? Good to see you all or speak to you all.
That's right. Well, they're listening. They're like, so originally you grew up in Venice. Yep. And Venice, California. I want to know, like, you know, did you go to high school in Santa Monica, Venice? Like, where did you go to
high school? Yeah, I went to Santa Monica. I did all my school in Santa Monica and also did some time living in the San Fernando Valley. So I did my time for that. So I feel like everyone in LA needs to do their stint in the SFV, you know?
That's right.
The West Side is where I spent most of my time. And yeah, man, I was grateful when I came back to pursue music. You know, it just was kind of a logical insert back to the West Side. And, you know, most of my musical time has been spent there, really until the pandemic knocked me out of LA.
I knocked the ball out. It was like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a big transition for sure. But always been grateful. You know, I think growing up there, being around, you know, not only such a, you know, international and vibrant music scene on the national level, but just, you know, being around so many great musicians that obviously live there and having access just to studios and all the things that I think, you know, is really inspirational. My dad was in the music business, so that was helpful also.
What did your dad do in the music?
He was a bass player and, you know, he was a studio musician, engineer. He was a touring musician until he had kids. And then I think we knocked him out of that lifestyle a bit. But yeah, man. So, you know, I grew up around musicians and I grew up around a lot of LA heads that were playing, you know, gigs and grew up going to gigs and grew up having a dad that played gigs. So that kind of was the normal thing, you know, it was just kind of a normal thing for me to jump into when I wanted to start pursuing music. I didn't have to go through parental like disdain, you know. It was so, we're actually happy.
Maybe more from your mom than your dad, we'll say. You know, I'm sure she was cool. She married a musician, so she knew it was in your blood. What was the moment of Zen for you that made you realize you wanted to be a musician?
Well, you know, actually, I think because my dad did it, I resisted being a musician for a long time. You know, I played like school band. And then, you know, when I was in high school, it was like Jack Johnson became the biggest thing. And I was playing saxophone at the time. And I was like, man, no one wants to hear a guy play saxophone. They want to hear like Jack Johnson-esque. So I picked up a guitar and I started strumming. But I never really wanted to pursue music. You know, when I went to college, I definitely didn't like think about I'm on my way to do music. I was, you know, kind of seeing the reality of what that music life was, you know, just from my dad's triumphs and tragedies, you know, that every musician has to sort of.
Well, it's such a grind. And, you know, it's like, you know, as I know, it's like you grind from the beginning, you grind in the middle, it gets a little bit easier and you kind of play like more profile gigs, but you're always grinding. Yeah. It's like there's always the hustle part of it, which kind of keeps us kind of young and old at the same time.
I appreciate that you throwing in the young part, because yeah, man, you know, it's definitely you know, I think more so than any other pursuit, you got to have such a wide range of skills. You know, you got to be a promoter, you got to be have some business acumen, and you got to be able to also play and create, you know. So obviously if you can, you know, hire people on to sort of a team that can help with some of those facets, it becomes easier. But at the same time, at the end of the day, I think the most successful people have their hands in every part of their operation. They have,
you know,
whether they're creating the, you know, advertising content, promotional content, they're still signing off on it and involved. Cause I think if you, you know, you're all, you know, at the end of the day, we're marketing ourselves, you know, and I think people enroll certainly for our music, but also for the people behind that music. So yeah, man, it is. I don't like to use the word grind because, like, you know, my friend once told me, man, if you told me your engine was grinding, I'd say you need, but it's definitely a full-time gig, you know, yeah. Like anybody that says musicians are lazy doesn't know any musicians, because it just never stops, man. You got to really pull yourself away sometimes and give yourself a day off, because there's always, always something to do, from content creation to booking to just even getting to shows and stuff like that, you know? Yeah. So, but I think, you know, those of us who, I remember when I told my dad, though, just to tie back to your question, I wanted to do music full time. He like looked at me and he was like, man, is there anything else you want to do? You know, like, is there anything else? Because, you know, I'm going to support you. I'm going to love you through this. And you have all of our support and anything I can do to help. But at the same time, you know, it's just kind of like, I mean, I don't want to tongue in cheek say, it's like when your kid wants to join the army or something, you're like, whoa, you know, and only a musician would understand what I'm saying, because you're really committing to a certain lifestyle, as you just alluded to. And,
well, I think a lot of it too is like, you know, I think musicians, even the ones that make it like huge, you know, we search for something way deeper than money or fame or, you know, any kind of like existence that most people are, would be satisfied with. We're like looking for heart. We're looking for a life of treasure that, you know, makes us feel good inside versus anything else, you know. Like, you know, we both have friends that like either left entertainment or arts, and they are getting hardened by life just by choosing the world that they're in. Whereas musicians, like, I always find that musicians, they search for something that is not visible. And I think that pursuit is where a lot of the joy comes from. It's like we find like so much gratification off of writing a good song. Like, you know that feeling when you write a good song, it's like, that's it. It's like, whereas most people are like looking for their company bonus or a raise, that doesn't mean the same to us. It's like, it's great to get paid for what we do, but really the search is for something invisible that we just look for inside. So I know you know what I mean by that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what puts musicians in a different realm. Was there any sage advice that your father gave you being a seasoned musician that he was like, look out for these troubles?
Definitely like some more specific business stuff, but he really encouraged me to write, you know. I think to become a songwriter, a lyricist and musical composer, as opposed to being kind of a side. And I started late, you know, because like I said, I really pursued business. I pursued other lines, because I kind of had that same thought. Like, I was like, I want to make a lot of money. That was kind of my initial young adult inspiration, was like, I don't want to struggle in that way. But then when I found music, when I found I had a knack for writing, you know, he really encouraged that. He's like, always write your songs and then, you know, really be in control of your catalog. And so that was really encouraged, more so than like spending hours shedding on guitar or like getting, you know, to that level of musicianship. Like I always say, I'm a songwriter. I use music to tell the stories of the writing, you know, but I really, when I'm around real musicians, I almost get a little nervous, you know, and I'm grateful that oftentimes when I'm in a band or a you know, a collaborative musical setting, I'm usually the songwriter. So I know the song, I know the material well.
Right.
'Cause I've definitely been on that other side too, when I've been hired to play guitar and stuff. And I have so much, you know, respect for guys that play in multiple projects and can just bounce from rehearsal to rehearsal. And they got that skill set, you know, it's second nature to them. They speak the music of language. I have a few good color palettes in music that I use, but right. Really, you know, I'm grateful that I was encouraged to write, because I think one, as part of my expressive artistry, lyrics are important. Like, it's an important part. The storytelling part has always been a really important part. And that's the music I was raised on. You know, that's what was interesting to me. I heard classical music and jazz and I was exposed to those things, but it was always the, you know, road, what I call the road trip artists. When we'd be on road trips, the Paul Simons, the Bob Dylans, the Bob Marleys, the, you know, there was like the music, my parents' record collection was my teachers, you know, and I'd put those on, and you don't realize how much you absorb listening to greats like that, you know, just in phrasing, in pacing, in rhyme scheme. And, you know, I was super into hip hop as well, which I'm grateful. Like early 90s hip hop was really foundational for me.
We're like kindred spirits, man. All the musical influences.
Yeah. And that was helpful too, because I think especially, and not to take away anything from current hip hop, because I think there's a really new style that's really unique and awesome. But like that early 90s to mid 90s hip hop was really important, because the phrasing around and the storytelling that was present within that type of music was just helpful, because, you know, and I had friends, we would sit around at lunch and beatbox and freestyle, and we'd have like little ciphers like that. And, you know, and it's good because it got you thinking quickly, and it started, you know, you realize that that phrasing structure is in your brain just from all that music. But with hip hop predominantly, because the rhyme scheme was so important, you know, such an important feature, you know, it really just ingrained in me. So when I went down to write music and started writing my own lyrics, you know, there was some foundation there. It wasn't like starting new, because there was just that like sort of normalcy in like where I could find rhymes and where I could actually, or even if it wasn't like a specific pentameter, just knowing how to link words together or phrases together. So it kind of had some lyrical, I guess, momentum, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the kind of music I like. I love proper and clever rhyme schemes. I'm also super impressed though by some artists that can make things that feel like they're rhyming, but there's not specific rhyme ending words. You know, when you actually break down the lyrics, you're like, wow, they don't actually rhyme, but you kind of get that same sort of
lyrical near rhymes.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's amazing, man. I think that gift is I don't want to say underappreciated, but it's something I really appreciate, you know, and I love taking time when I find an artist that moves me, you know, because it's usually through the lyrics first and the music there second. I take that time to really look, you know, what did they write and what was, you know, what, and I try to break it down. I try to hand write out lyrics when I'm really moved by a song, because I feel like that connection between their phrasing and their rhyme scheming is going to help me the next time I sit down to write. You know, it kind of just goes in that way.
I know you're a huge Paul Simon fan, and
yeah,
as am I. And, you know, I got to tell you this because it's kind of cool. So I went to the Grammy Museum for like a Q&A, uh-huh, and like never ask questions,
yeah,
ever, because I'm always just like, I just want to listen. I don't want to be that guy. But like, they were like, we're going to take some questions. I raised my hand first, and I was like, you know, I'm sitting 5 feet from Paul Simon. I don't know if I'll ever get this chance. So I was like, you know, I went to another Q&A, and Clive Davis said Bridge Over Troubled Water was the greatest song ever written. What to you is the song you wish you wrote?
Uh-huh. And nice question.
He was like, you know, I never really felt like Bridge Over Troubled Water was my song, because I only sang one verse and it came in the second verse and I didn't even sing the lead. So he said, I never really felt like that was mine. But if I had to choose a song that I wish I wrote, it would be Silent Night.
No shit.
Isn't that crazy? So like on his, and on a, one of his latest records, like they gave everybody a CD and like I put it in and he quotes Silent Night in it. And he said one of the reasons was the lilting melodies, the long melodies. He's like, I just love that song. It always feels good. And he's like, I wish I wrote that song. And I was like, dude, of all the songs you've written, there are so many better songs than Silent Night. Like, it's crazy. That's the song you would choose. So I was like, so blown away, because I would not have picked that. I would have picked a Beatles song or some of these Everly Brothers. I know he's huge into the Everly Brothers. But as far as your writing scheme and your creative process, tell me like a little bit about how that works. Do you start with guitar? Do you start with the keys or lyrics or words? Or,
you know, every song's journey has been different for me. You know, for a lot of times, like one album I wrote, and I wrote it while running. Like I was living near the beach. And so like, you know, like I would run, and the different, you know, energy I had, like the quicker I ran, obviously it was kind of like, that was the like foundational rhythm pattern. And so that really, like my More Love album was all running. Like I would start to run, and I'd like have a concept that just kind of popped in that quietness. And then kind of like my feet became sort of the quarter note beats. And then I kind of wrote around that, you know, or sometimes, you know, like something will just randomly, and I'm sure you have too, I'd never want anyone to hear, but the iPhone, I have to give a lot of credit for, because prior to the iPhone, it was harder, man, because I used to have like an old school tape recorder where you had to hit play and record at the same time.
Yep.
It was whack because you didn't have that like just ease. And so with the advent, you know, most of my like quote unquote professional songwriting, the iPhone recording feature has been so important for me, because I feel sometimes too, man, we're just struck with inspiration and you know, not capturing that. Sometimes I'll wake up out of a deep sleep and have a melody, and those kind of suck because I think I've really done it clear, and I wake up in the morning, it's like, you know, like, and I'm like, damn. And you know, a lot of those have gone. And you know, not to get too ethereal here, but I really do believe my best writing really does come through me. You know, when I try to write songs, I feel like there's a skill set there, but I feel like it's methodical and that flow state isn't as present. And sometimes, man, I think the best songs I've written were really just blessings given to me. I feel like I just tuned in and was really it's kind of like being like the receiver. I once heard this great interview with Lionel Richie, and he goes, you know, when I'm about to write a song, what I hear first is the radio DJ on the Lionel Richie channel be like, this is the new song from Lionel Richie. Then it's like he uses that to like lead into, and then he kind of just listens. And I think that's such a beautiful quality to the best songs I've really heard and on some level. And I don't know, you know, whether that comes from God or whether that comes from the universe or, you know, whether the song was written. And again, it's just like the frequency we tune into. I just know when there's that quality of listening in my own silence that sometimes a song can emerge. And, you know, that's challenging too, though, because I've definitely gone years where I'm like, come on, I got to tune in. Come on, I got to tune in. And, you know.
You said it. It's kind of like you get out of the way.
Yeah.
Song, like, you make room for the song to kind of run through you. And those are the best, you know. And it's hard because we try to capture that lightning in a bottle.
Right.
But it's like, it really is that you're fighting the ego. Like, because you're trying to hold on to it. But at the same time, the best songs are when you're not holding on to anything and you're just letting it kind of run its course.
Absolutely. And I'd say when I was younger and starting out, I was in that inspiration a lot more. I would say, you know, I've had to build inside of my writing discipline to sit down and write too. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes, man, you're going to write songs that aren't going to be recorded and maybe not even get played live, or maybe they'll get played live at the campfire or, you know, in like a setting that's not even a show setting. And that's as far as they'll go. But I do believe like any.
Well, why do you think that? And we've got it. Why do you kind of feel that way, though? That's an important question.
I feel like certain songs you just know right away, like you're excited to share them, and other ones are like your maintenance. Like, you know, like not every song for me that I've written is going to be a public song. Sometimes it's just like me going through the motions to stay present. You know, I think it was Sting. He was talking about that too. Like he compared like writing to fishing. Like you got to sometimes just sit there with your pole in the water and you're not going to even get a bite. But you got to kind of carve out the time with your, and I'm sure you've done it too, where you sit with your guitar and you kind of play this, kind of go through the rigmarole of chords. And every now and again, you slide into something and you're like, oh, that's cool. And you'll turn the recorder on. But sometimes, man, you sit there for hours and nothing, it's dead broadcast. But I feel like it's important for me to a few times a week, put the pole in the water, because you just don't know. And, you know, I always say when I talk to younger songwriters is that like I've had years where I haven't written anything new, and it gets really scary, but I do need to have that discipline to go and sit and write. And, you know, then there's other modalities within the practice of listening to other people's music sometimes is what I need to do to find that inspiration. Sometimes, man, you got to go live life and put your music down.
Yep.
And go fall in love, fall out of love. Have life experiences that then when you sit down again, you've like refilled your well. I noticed that for me, like when I used to tour a lot more, when I'd come home, it would be I needed to kind of put music down for a little bit and go live.
Yeah.
So that when I sat down to write again, there were things to talk about that weren't just like, I'm a bitter musician and you know, I'm feeling jaded right now and fuck music. Or excuse me.
No, it's all right. You can swear. A big thing with me when it comes to writing is like, I'm always overwhelmed with the input. Like I like, you see records all around and CDs all around. And there's so many things I haven't even gotten to. And I just always want it to be like that. And I feel like as long as your input outweighs your output, then you're always going to have some kind of inspiration to kind of draw from. But I've definitely gotten to those places where it's like, you either feel like worn out or you've given so much that you're not able to tap into whatever it is. And it's frustrating because it is the greatest feeling when you write something good. Yeah. Reason I asked you that question about like what songs you think are the ones that you would play at shows or whatever. I also feel like we as songwriters are very hard about censoring. Like we, as soon as a song comes out, we're judging it already. We're like, oh, this won't work. And it's like, so much of it is, it's like once the song is born, it's kind of not ours anymore. It's like you kind of navigate which songs get to that recording phase, but you never know. We never know what song's going to hit with the public. Like there could be a song that you've never played in a performance setting that could be this monster hit that people gravitate towards. Cause we hear all the stories of all the songs that, you know, musicians and artists never thought that would be huge hits and they became huge hits for them. You know what I mean? So I often wonder that question myself, like, am I putting songs away that maybe should get to the forefront because I'm like thinking about censoring it with all the judgments I have. You know, it's like we can't do that. They're like kids. It's like we're like giving birth to something, and it's so hard to not, like, we have to embrace it and just kind of like leave it alone, you know what I mean? Instead of like, oh, this won't work. It's not the genre I should be doing, or it's not lyrically as cool as these other four songs. So I do that. I'm guilty of that myself. That's why I asked, because, you know, I think we as songwriters are always looking to be like, have our best work, like always in front of us and pushing it out there. Mm-hmm. One thing I wanted to ask you, you know, you said musicians wear all these different hats. Where do you find like is the most frustrating part of the music industry in general for you?
You know, I think the area that, you know, really builds my resentment for lack of a better term is sort of like, you know, there's certain doors that only open to, especially now that metrics inside of your Spotify plays and your follows and your likes are real metrics that don't have a lot to do necessarily with the talent or the expression of the music. And those are hard because, man, I've had real music executives say, like, we can only, like, and their job is to like be a promoter, let's just say, right? Like they're literally getting paid. The job title is to do the work of promotion. And they're like, well, we can't work with you until you've been promoted to a certain level. And I'm like, well, what am I actually like hiring this service for, you know, at the end of the day? Because, you know, that's another thing I try to remind artists, like everyone that helps you with your music is your employee. And they treat you like you work for them, but you really got to remember, like at the end of the day, they're taking a percentage or they're taking, you know, a payment to do a task for you. But I always feel like those catch 22s are those, you know, conundrums within where they're like, you know, this service is meant to get you more numbers, but you can't get onto this service till you have a certain amount of numbers. And you're just like, well, what am I supposed to do? You know, like at the end of the day, I don't need promotion if I've already got a million followers. You know what I mean? Like, it's like getting me from that space. I think, you know, another frustration is some of the streaming situations. And, you know, it's a bit hypocritical of me because I utilize Spotify. I pay $10 a month because it is a convenience. But as an artist, and I know even very made artists on that platform don't make a lot of money. And it's hard when you see executives in that business, you know, have billions of dollars now, like not just millions.
Crazy. I don't know if you know this, and this is what frustrates me. It's like, every Spotify employee, every single one, makes six figures.
Yeah.
And yet they screw over the musicians that are making the content that their entire app is based off of.
Right.
This like nauseating. And it's like also a lot of the playlists and streamings, like the streaming like playlists, they're all rigged. They're all like, I always used to think the playlists were like random people just making playlists. And then you find out, oh, it's all rigged. Everybody's getting paid to play these certain songs, and this is how it works. And it's like, this is bullshit. I mean, I can go on. That's why I wanted to ask, because you and I have been doing it like ourselves.
Yeah, man. I mean, you know, I feel like, and it's sad because I feel like the streaming platform is an apparatus that could really democratize the process, you know, because it's always kind of been that way, whether it was like you needed to get a label deal to even record music, you know, back in the day, you really did, because I mean, unless you were a millionaire and you could afford your own Neve Council and, you know, like when you know, studio time was really expensive and to press vinyl. You know, now that that software has democratized, it's sad, man. You know, and I think also, you know, what's shame on the music industry is that there's not the same support as other industries in supporting the future of music. You know what I mean? Where like to me, it's like that. Like if I own Spotify, I cap myself at 1 billion, and then every billion, every dollar over that billion. I mean, no human needs $1 billion to be honest.
I totally agree.
Any money generated should go back, and that should be funds where we get, you know, free loans to record and opportunities to expand. Like that should become a financial pool for young artists, or just to have that opportunity to train, you know, with people who are, you know, masters at what they do, because there's so many facets to this. That, you know, and I just don't see that same mentorship. Like if I wanted to become a carpenter, like the best carpenters would seek me out as a novice carpenter to try to develop my skill set. You know, they wouldn't see me as competition. They wouldn't see me. But for whatever reason in music, I've seen that be really, you know, it's competitive to the point that I feel, you know, like a lot of great artists don't get an opportunity to, you know, display their talents. And I just feel the industry in general has done a really bad job of recalibrating. Now, luckily there's been some breakthroughs. If it wasn't for, you know, I think SoundCloud allowed some of the newer hip hop to become
right.
Like I think some of the most prolific artists today without some of the democratized software where they were able to, you know, get their music to masses and then become a massive hit and then industry kind of bent their way. You know, we'd miss out on a lot of expression. And I think sadly that's what pains me, man, because I know, you know, as well as I do, I have not only friends who are like pursuing music, but I have friends who are so good at singing and playing and will never record an album. They'll never book a show because it's just not in their mindset. But I'm like, wow, like these people are phenomenal. Yes. I've been to songwriting circles where people who have never been in the music business or presented themselves or even have a Instagram page or anything saying they're musicians just blow me completely away, you know, because, you know, music is a part of the human condition, you know. No, there's no barrier to your voice. And if you are blessed enough to learn to play an instrument, that expressive quality is just available to anybody, regardless of their status in any industry. So it would be nice to see, you know, if I was could wave a wand, it would just that some of these bigger tech industry music sites would do a better job.
You know what? You hit something right on the head. It's like you think Spotify would have a studio that would have musicians come in and record music for their platform, but they don't want to invest in something like that. Makes so much sense for them to have. I mean, even YouTube's doing that. It's like, you're absolutely right. There's this sense of corporate greed with all of these companies and platforms that, you know, kind of it denies the opportunities for the very content creators they're basing their platforms on. So, but you know what? I will tell you this, and I know people have told you this before too. You're one of those real artists that, you know, no matter how much a Spotify platform or an MTV or whatever it is trying to spoon feed artists to their listeners and the audience, people get tired of that. You know what I mean? And it's like they'll start searching and finding real artists like yourself or myself. And that's how we kind of gain that notoriety and that kind of momentum. It's from, you know, people not really wanting that same kind of music. But I know what you mean. It's like when you see somebody that really is not that great, and I'm sure you think this too. It's like when you see somebody that's like not that great, doesn't write their own songs, they're completely not, you know, in tune with playing an instrument or even just like singing their own words that they wrote, but yet it's marketed so heavily, it's frustrating because it's like, you know, you're producing your records, you're writing your records, you're making arrangements, you're putting in the time, you're doing all the development that was done and paid for 20 and 30 years ago, but you're doing it out of your own pocket. Right. So that's why this platform exists, because I want that, you know, kind of spotlight. And you know what? I'll tell you, in the last couple of weeks, I had Victor Wooten on the show. I had Jeff Coffin from Dave Matthews Band. And these are well-known musicians.
Right.
Also have the same gripes. Like, they don't have these promotion legs or labels putting them out there in a way that is giving them a showcase. Dave Matthews Saxophonist has a new record out, and you would think Dave Matthews label would invest in promoting it, but they don't, because they're in the business of a Dave Matthews and nobody else. You know what right. I mean? So that's just how the music industry works. Before we go on, let's play something. What do you want to play us first?
Of the links I sent?
Yep.
Why don't we play Ready to Fly?
All right, here's Clayton Joseph Scott, Ready to Fly. That's as beautiful as it comes, man. That is.
Thank you, brother. I haven't watched that video in a while. It was good to see some cool faces in that.
I want to tell you something. Like, we played with a lot of bands. You guys are definitely one of my favorite bands from SoCal, in the country, doing what you're doing. We both are influenced by world music so much. And I just love your writing, man. I love your voice. I love your writing, the arrangements, the band members. They're just all killing. We share a percussionist, Will Phillips.
That's right.
But tell me how some of your world travels, you know, I know you went to India and you lived yep. for a little bit. And tell me how some of those have infiltrated into your songwriting process.
Well, you know, I started the first time I ever like had the inclination that I could actually make money playing music. Me and some friends went to Europe and we had no money. We were just like, we're going to busk in the street, you know, and like play. And I think that was the first time. You know, we were out there for about 2 months in Spain and Italy and Paris. And we were like, you know, we didn't know we didn't know what we were doing, but we were just young enough and like pompous enough to figure we could make it. And We call that the skinny tour, bro, because we got so skinny. We like barely could make enough money. We'd buy like one margarita pizza and like split it up and like eat it. That was like, but you know what that did was kind of gave the idea that it was possible to make money playing music. And I think that kind of led to one thing and the next. And then all my world travels, since I always bring my guitar, and I feel like having that instrument, no matter what culture I'm in, has opened doors for me of places to stay, people to meet, just jam sessions you end up having, that exchange of music that can break down any sort of like cultural moments of confusion. You know, the language of music has held me so much. I mean, to the point where I make great friends while I'm traveling in foreign countries and end up staying in people's homes. I just feel like, you know, and it's still that way. When I see a musician at the airport, someone with an instrument in the airport, there's always a conversation. Oh, what you up to, man? You touring? You? But not only that, I think to see, and when you really, you know, kind of do some more international traveling, not so much around touring your music, but like literally as a traveler, you kind of see how the music proliferates that culture, how music is used, how music is felt and understood. And that's so helpful for me, you know, when I'm writing also, because, you know, like I'm sure you know, we all have our own patterns too as songwriters we get into. And so sometimes, you know, I'll be like, well, what if I was going to make this like an Indian raga style, you know, and it just kind of like flips up the way I'm thinking about the pursuit. So I'm not just doing the same, what I call my box chords, where I'm kind of stuck in my box of like 1-4-5 or whatever it might be. It's like, well, let me play around. Let me play around with tuning. Let me play around with tone. Let me play around with sensation. And sometimes, you know, listening, even to listen to music in a language I don't have any comprehension. Again, you hear phrasing, you hear rhyme scheme, you can hear the way notes are sort of strung together, melody lines that just break me out of my own habits. And that's been really important. But more than anything, man, it's just, you know, while traveling is when my dream of being a musician became real. You know, it's like it went from being like abstract into being actualized. So I owe a lot to the world and that support. When I was in India, I thought I went there to be a yoga instructor. And, you know, I just was playing music so much. I had this little guitar with me that I bought there. And, you know, I was like, this is what I really want to do. And so I'm really grateful. And,
where did you go in India?
Mainly I was in Uttarakhand, which is kind of a state up in the north east. Cause I was training in a place called Rishikesh. I was training yoga. I spent a lot of time in Dharamsala, where the Dalai Lama is. And so predominantly I was in the foothills of the Himalayas.
That's crazy. And
what's that?
That's crazy. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I'm so appreciative to India because it gave me, you know, it's really also was that post-college time where I really felt like, you know, I was there long enough that I was able to explore, you know, the real version of myself that wasn't the social mind of myself or the parental mind of myself. And there was a beautiful freedom to explore not only music, but my spirituality there and my...
You know, I'm from there. I'm from, my family's from Kerala. So we're all from the South. So like, so cool. It's like when I travel all over the North, you really feel like every state is a different world. I mean, it has like different languages, different like foods, different smells. It just has like, but there's so much spirituality there that you cannot come out. Like you can't refuse or deny that you come out a better person when you
There's nothing like it. I tell people all the time, you know, a lot of my friends just got back from Burning Man, and I'm like, if you want to go to a real Burning Man, you should travel to India, because it's like it's a most amazing sensual experience. And I mean, I could spend an hour just describing walking down a street there, just with all the color and sound. And like you said, the olfactory, you know, you'll, from everything from jasmine and incense to decay and then food. And it's just, it's so like opening, and then the sea of people. And what I really appreciate is in the mass of humanity that's there, I think you get humbled in a way that you can't like experience anywhere else. You're just such a drop in a bucket there. And so I'm really grateful for India. It gave me so much contextual foundation for my life. And even though I was playing music there, it more gave me a way of being. I think that's allowed me to continue to pursue music to this day, to not get so caught up in some of those other aspects we were talking about. And I feel like that part is really unfolding for me. I'm grateful as I get older, I move away from my younger man's mind around my music career of, you know, that constant seeking external validation, you know, whether it's more people at shows or more, you know, obviously the financial piece is important. Just as an artist, you want to be able to support yourself well. But when that becomes the main, you know, decider of your success, I've felt, you know, in the blessing of COVID too, when it took away my music career in the way that it did for a lot of us, I still wanted to play music. You know, once all that was stripped away, there was no shows, there was no promotion, there was nothing to like feed that ego side or that outside validation. You know, there were, what was left was me wanting to still play music and still write and still share and really realizing how much that's just a part of myself, you know? And
I love that.
Grateful, man, because prior to that, I was getting lost in the business and, you know, I was getting jaded around playing shows and I was getting upset and I was getting frustrated a lot. And I was
starting the circus. It's not like musician friendly. So yeah. That's the first part of it. It's like, you know, and I know you know this, it's like you write the song and then all of a sudden it's like up to you to pay for every part of it, the touring, the band, the recordings. And it's like no other business is really built like that because there are loans, there are other, you know, financial systems that bankroll other businesses, but it won't do that for music because of the circus of all of it, you know. But you know what was so great, and Prince used to say this, the real like joy and payment is when the creation's completed. And it's like when I hear your music, and I'm being really honest, like I don't say this about a lot of artists, but man, you write beautiful music. And I still feel that way, like when I first heard your music, when Will Phillips said, man, you got to have Clayton Joseph Scott play with us at House of Blues. He played me your music. And I was like, dude, this is unbelievable. Nobody plays me stuff where there's African influenced music. I was like, this guy is definitely influenced by Paul Simon, like I am. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it's like you cannot deny that you write beautiful, joyous music about your life experience. And
Thank you, bro. Thank you. Anything to
take from even this interview, never stop, man, because dude, it's inspiring for me. It's inspiring for other artists. It's inspiring for people and they will find it. They will find your music. And I know you feel like this too, because I always feel like this. It's like at the end of the day, we're leaving the world music. You know, that's going to be our legacy. And I'm going to tell you, it's like, even if it doesn't have this, you know, fanfare of 100,000 people at your shows or mine, you know what? We know that the life purpose was completed and fulfilled. And it's like, what a beautiful thing you leave in the world.
You know, man. And that's something, you know, I remember at one point early in my career, you know, when I was feeling really down and like feeling that frustration, my dad was like, well, go do like, all right, walk away. No one's forcing you to play music. Like, go ahead, go be a dentist, go do. And not taking away from Dennis, but he's like, you know, making that point. He's like, no one's got a gun to your head to do this. You're choosing this. And I think, you know, that really got me clear. And I think, you know, that's part of the artist's journey, man. We just go through those moments of like self-deprivation and self-inquiry. And I think, you know, that's something I wish I was told more, even though I knew seeing my dad's life, it's like, as an artist, your life isn't going to look like a lot of people's lives. Like you got to be really okay with marching to the beat of your own drum. And that can get heavy sometimes, you know, when you're looking around in your friend groups and the people that, you know, whatever might seem quote unquote normal to you, isn't happening in your life in the same way. But at the same time, you know, the things that become normalized to you as an artist, other people just can't even believe, you know, and it becomes, we almost get desensitized to the uniqueness of, you know, pursuing something like art. And at the end of the day, it really is, man, it's really your expression is priceless. There's no price that can be put on your expression, you know?
I'm sure when you played like things like the Beach Life Festival, all those friends came up to you like, hey man, can you give me passes?
Yeah, totally, totally. And then, you know, of course, and that's how it is with success. You know, everyone believes in you when the outward But having that belief in yourself is so important too, man, as a life skill, to kind of tie back to, you know, in that way, what India gave me was a real sense of self and a self of sense of self identity, because I was traveling alone there. And it was far out for me, culturally speaking, to be far from home and far from cultural norms, that I really began to rely on myself in a way and know myself in a way that international travel. And that really affected that record that we played. I mean, I love that record because, yeah, there's like African style guitar, but there's a Mexican harpist on there. You know, he's playing that harp line. And, you know, we used all kinds of instruments. We had a Ghanaian drum choir come in and play like hand instruments and stuff. So I think too, you know, when you begin to be a songwriter and you have these other palettes of like, ooh, cool sounds and stuff, especially, you know, in a recording process like that, can be really awesome. And, you know, like that's what's beautiful when something that just started on a guitar as a little lick. I was trying to learn how to play in six, and that song came out just from learning a little rhythm to play. And, you know, just again, it's like sometimes that's the string and you keep pulling on the string and then, wow, a whole song comes out of that, just that little guitar.
Well, what I love about African music, I know you know the same. It's like, well, you're playing in six, but the groove is in four.
Right, right.
And it's just hitting. Yeah, and yeah. You can't not do, you know, you can't not move to it. So,
totally, you know,
you have all the ingredients, like, with what the bass part's doing, what your melody's doing, and it feels good. It just feels good. And it's like, that is the greatest accomplishment, I think, when you're trying to create something.
Yeah, man.
It feels good. It's like you are tapping into the very life source that's giving you that. You know what I mean? Let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
Let's play. Just kind of stay in the vein. We're also kind of going in time order to chronological order. Let's play The Home next. And this was the first time we ever tried to make like a storytelling music video. It's like, you know, bring a visual into the lyrical storytelling. So, this one's called Home.
Here's Home by Clayton Joseph Scott.
Me not man nor stipulations. I read the arguments of the architect, and I don't believe he's right. Like a man stuck in the slave trade, I'm pulling petals from those flowers I see. Hey man, I could use a break, but I just can't seem to get away. So why didn't we wait so long? Did we wait so long? I wanna know, please tell me now. Why didn't we wait so long? We wait so long. I got memories of yesterday, decisions that I might have made. All the monuments haunted with, if I'm brave enough to cry. No back door to escape, no terms to renegotiate. Knew the stakes before I played, but I just can't seem to forget her face. So why didn't we wait so long? Did we wait so long? I wanna know, please tell me now. Why didn't we wait so long? Did we wait so long? You know, tonight the feeling was coming strong. I was alone. I'm going home. So baby, come back home. Baby, come back home. Baby, come back home. Baby, come back home. I can't figure it out. It makes me wanna scream and shout out loud. On a one-way call, always leads me back to the place. Back to the place. Going home. Going home. Going on, going on. Why didn't we wait so long? Did we wait so long? I wanna know, please tell me now. Why didn't we wait so long? Did we wait so long. You know, tonight the feeling was coming strong. You're never alone, you're never alone. So baby, baby, come back home. Baby, come back home. Baby, come back home. Baby, come back home.
So freaking awesome, man. Tell me about that video. Tell me about the inspiration behind the song.
Well, the inspiration behind the song, where we were trying to do a follow-up record to More Love. And I had some like leftover tunes, and that one kind of just surfaced to the top. We were playing it live a lot, you know, and at that point I was pretty enmeshed in the same band. And we were kind of transitioning from like the Clayton Joseph Scott project into the band Brightside. Which we began a tour around as. And I like that too, because the identity at that point had grown from, even though I was writing the songs, it was like the identity of the group had grown into a band. Like truly, there was the like collaborative effort of the same musicians. And anyway, so we made this EP, and we were just starting to getting to tour the country and stuff. So it was just a really exciting time. And I think the inspiration behind that song was really just like about dreams, you know, like why do we wait so long to, you know, acknowledge? And so for some people, they don't acknowledge till it's way too late, you know, till the end of their lives, or maybe in a time, or sometimes it just takes that shaking of like maybe a near-death experience or a death experience of someone close to you, where you realize like, man, like this is so finite, you know, this whole time is finite. And I really appreciate what you said earlier about at the end of life, I may have struggled to have many sleepless nights. Like, what am I doing with my life? But I know when I die, I'm going to die with a smile on my face, because for the most part, you know, I've really tried to listen to that voice inside of me that asked me to do this, because from a logical standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? But
this is what I think about. I'm sure maybe you have or haven't thought about this, or I know you have. It's like when you look at your life, you're going to see your life documented through song. Whereas like nobody else is going to have that kind of journal in life. And it's like that is the greatest thing that music can ever give us. It's like when we leave the world, you will know Clayton Joseph Scott at all these different phases of life and how your perspective has changed. Whereas I don't even think if we wrote journals ourselves, we would be able to do that. You know what I mean? It's like, it just wouldn't happen, because there's something that's so clear with writing a song that's like 3 to 4 minutes long. It is like a beginning, a middle, an end.
Right.
And it's like we're doing that over and over and again throughout different phases of how we see the world. I mean, there's no greater way and scope that you can leave. And I think that is one of the greatest things we kind of forget about. We don't look at it that way yeah, because we're always looking at the immediate and the gratification parts of it. But if you think of like, you know, an accountant, when they're like on their deathbed, their whole life is documented in these numbers that never matter. You know what I mean? But it's like when people look to your life, you will leave them songs that are giving them perspective. And like, man, a lot of people don't write songs like you. You know, it's like, I love all the African influence, all the world influence. And thank it's you. Like writing about something that's positive and real and something that's going to take you away from the moment. Even just listening to it right now, I'm like, man, this just is so good. It just, I love it.
Yeah. And I think that's what I like about writing, because, you know, I've written essays and I've written, you know, travel blogs and things like that. I think that what's special, like you said, about a song is it's a complete journey in 3 to 5 minutes. You know what I mean? It is. It's like a full. And I think that's what the best writers do. You know, I'm always amazed by people like Paul Simon, by people like Dylan, by people like there's this one Paul Simon song where he takes you on a full temporal lifetime journey in 3 minutes. You know what I mean? Someone's like life as a kid, as middle age, and then as an old person. And like, I think that's amazing to like guide someone on an adventure, you know, in song like that, in storytelling song. Yes. Or, you know, maybe it's more political or maybe more just, you know, but it still can take you through a trope. But it has the inflection of music, you know, fused in. And I mean, I feel so fortunate that, you know, you think of some of our heroes that we mentioned, there wasn't a long line of people really doing that kind of music, you know, like Bob Dylan didn't have a huge, you know, we have thousands, if not millions of artists we can lean into that have done sort of singer-songwriter music, whether that be in rock and roll, blues, whatever. But, you know, like, I think, what was it like? Louis Armstrong was one of the first people to write like a narrative song that wasn't, that like was a story song, you know? And that was the beginning. That was in the 30s, you know? So it's not very long we've had this style of music that we've become so accustomed to, you know, of having lyrics and, you know, because prior to that, it was instrumental music, you know? There wasn't really a lot, or opera or something. I guess opera could be the like precursor to, you know, songwriters, but
it was still based on like a story with characters. This is like autobiographical. It's different.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever seen that documentary on Robert Johnson, but I've been going through this crazy Robert Johnson phase. And, you know, it's like this guy lived a very tragic life.
Right.
And, like, he's probably the most like influential songwriter of our time because of all the different genres he's influenced. And man, he was shunned by his own family. He was shunned by his own community. Like, right. People thought he was the devil. Like, right. I mean, it's so wild. And he was right. This is the life I'm. So every time I have a gripe, I think of him. I'm like, dude, this guy was blamed for his wife dying during birth because of the music he was writing. You know what I mean? Like, he still did it. It's like,
That's true.
So easy.
And then just to think of a person too that didn't know his influence. I mean, think about that. Collection, was it 22 songs or 18 songs or whatever? His entire recorded catalog has influenced more music. There's a through line through like almost every song, all the way up to modern hip hop. That's a through line to Robert Johnson that you can't, you know, and it's just like, damn. Like,
you know, I don't know if you're part of the story, but this is so crazy. So, like, right when he had his big break, Carnegie Hall was like, find this guy, we want him to perform. And then they go in on the search and realize he had died 2 weeks before. And so they played his record like as the performance to a room full of people in Carnegie Hall. And it's like, that's crazy. The guy gets poisoned or dies like seriously and then for his big break. So it's like, man, it's you know, you just never know how you're going to influence the world, how you're going to touch upon it. Let's play something else. What are we playing last?
Well, this last one, we got permission to record a Paul Simon song, actually. So this was my COVID album, my most recent album. It's called View from the Moon. And I collaborated with the singer who's singing with me, a great singer-songwriter up here named Aaron Reed. Him and his brother have a project called The Brothers Reed. And, you know, I was just in that space, man. I was like, am I done playing music? And he called me and went over and he had a nice recording rig in his house. So we recorded some songs. And then we were always singing this song together whenever we played live. And I was like, let's just go do this, man. Let's just go record this. And, you know, we got a license from Paul Simon's people to put it out. And this is Graceland. And this was one of the first songs I ever heard as a kid. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to write a song like that. And it's another one of those songs. If you really get hip to the rhyme scheme, there's not a lot of direct rhymes in it. It's like, but it moves like it rhymes. It moves like a hip hop song, but there's not like da 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 da. You know, it's just like a very beautiful speak. And, you know, this song's done on his record as sort of an up-tempo song. But when I really got hip to the lyrics, it's really about going through a divorce. And it's a really sad song. So I kind of turned it into a ballad. And this features Aaron Reed singing along with me. Paul Simon's great song, Graceland.
Here's Graceland by Clayton Joseph Scott.
Ooh. Well, the Mississippi Delta was shining like a national guitar. I am following a river down the highway through the cradle of a civil war. I'm going to Graceland, Graceland, Memphis, Tennessee. I'm going to Graceland. Homeboys and pilgrims with families, we all going to Graceland. In my traveling companion, 9 years old, he's the child of my first marriage. Baby, I've a reason to believe we both will be received in Graceland. She comes back to tell me that she's gone. As if I didn't notice this, if I didn't know my own bed. As if I never noticed the way she brushed her hair from her forehead. And I can sing losing love, it's like a window in your heart. Everybody sees you're blown apart. Everybody feels the wind blowing strong now. Oh, 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 in Graceland, Graceland, Memphis, Tennessee, I'm going to Graceland. For reasons I cannot explain, there's some part of me wants to see Graceland. In my traveling companion, it's ghosts in empty sockets. Keep looking at ghosts in empties. Baby, I'm a reason to believe we all will be received in Graceland. City calls herself the human trampoline. And sometimes when I'm falling flat, tumbling through the turmoil, I say, whoa. So this is what she means. She means we're bouncing into Graceland. And I can sing the love, it's like a window in your heart. Everybody sees you're blown apart. Everybody feels the wind blowing strong. Oh, 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 in Graceland, Graceland, Memphis, Tennessee, I'm going to Graceland. I may be obliged to defend every long, every end, and maybe there's no obligations now. Well, maybe I've a reason to believe we all will be received in Graceland. I'm going to Graceland. I'm going to Graceland. I'm going to Graceland. I'm going to Graceland.
Fantastic. Gave me chills, man. Where can people find you if they want to find your music, Clayton?
We'll have a website, ClaytonJosephScott.com. Probably most active on Instagram as far as social media goes, but I'm not great at social media, admittedly. But that's Clay Josco, at Clay Josco. Or if you type in Clayton Joseph Scott, there is a Clayton Joseph Scott Sr. That's not me, obviously. You'll know right away the difference. Anyway, and Facebook. On my website, there's a way to sign up for a newsletter that comes out once a month that kind of tells about shows. But predominantly, I think Facebook and Instagram is the best way if you wanted to see some live stuff or just content that I'm putting out. And I'm really excited. At the end of this month, I'm heading to Fiji to go write a new record, and excited to really sort of immerse myself in that style of music. And I'm looking forward to just seeing, it's time to do a happy record. So
I'm looking forward to hearing it, man.
Man. So I'm really looking forward to that. I have a whole month to go write, and I'm going to, I'll just be really looking forward to that. And so I don't know the timeline on that, but I'm looking forward, cause I want to write all new songs and do an album of just, you know, post pandemic celebratory music, you know?
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to it. And, when you get back, we should talk about doing some more shows together. Because, man, I just love you.
I'd be honored, bro. I'd be honored for sure.
You're great, Matt. You're a very inspirational dude. And never stop writing, man. Never stop, like, just giving the world what you give, because it is an amazing thing. I really love your music, man. I don't say that about a lot of people, so I really mean it.
Thank you, brother. Same here. And it's thanks for sharing your platform and letting me share a little bit about my life today. It's just been a real blessing and honor to be here. And anyone out there listening, thank you for tuning in and giving some of your time to us, because
Clayton, you have an open invitation to keep coming back. Every time you got a record to release, come by Wake Up Hollywood and let's talk about the record. All right.
Beautiful. And same, man, if you're ever coming through Southern Oregon, as long as I'm here, you got a place to stay. I got guitars on the wall, as you can see, back there, man. So grab anyone. Yeah.
we'll make it happen. But blessings to you. Thanks for being a part of Wake Up Hollywood. And we'll see you on the other side, man.
Yes. Cheers, man.
Bye, everybody. Take care, everybody. On behalf of Sam, myself, and Clayton, we'll see you guys next week. Peace and love.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.